High Technology Tech 37 Webinar. Our Tech 37 Webinar is a monthly series focused on a different solution and designed to pack a lot of information into a quick 37-minute format so you can continue on about your busy day. The core of the presentation will be within the 37-minute window, so if you need to drop off, you can rest assured you've received all the information as promised. If you have any questions or comments you think you might have missed on today's webinar, you can find them on our blog on WWT.com. Just be sure to scroll down to the bottom of the webpage for that blog. Today's topic, moving your apps to the cloud. Why and how? We have a great lineup of WWT panelists today, including Chris Infante, Jason Guibert, Brian Liebert, and Joe Hainline. Among the many items we'll cover, application development, application migration, and how the app impacts business performance, and application security, elements of operating in the cloud versus private cloud. Just some general housekeeping items before we begin. If at any time during our conversation today you have questions, be sure to post them to the Q&A window, which is now open. We'll be sure to address as many of them as we can before the end of the presentation. You can also engage with us online. You can tweet your questions on Twitter using the @WWT_INC. Be sure to use the hashtags TechTalk and Tech37. That's TECTALK or TEC37. Now that we've gone over those, let's introduce our panelists. And also a quick thank you to Randy Van and David Yates for producing this program. We wouldn't be able to do it without them. Our first panelist is Chris Infante, WWT Engagement Manager, Big Data and Cloud. Jason Guibert also is with us today. He's with WWT Compute and Cloud Consultant. We also have Brian Liebert, WWT Principal Consultant over Security. And last but not least, WWT's Asynchrony Labs, Joe Hainline is with us. He's a Project Manager over Cryptox, Ionic, and Podium. And I'll hand it off to you.
Cool. All right, Brian, thank you very much. And you know, I'll reiterate, thank you everybody for joining us today. So I'm really excited about the panel we have here assembled to talk about cloud. You know, it's one of the most common topics our customers are talking about. You know, we have all of our applications. We're looking about what to migrate to the cloud, which cloud should we choose, what are the different considerations we should have. And I think one of the areas where cloud is kind of unique as compared to some of other of WWT's technology practices is it really touches a lot of different areas of IT and business. So as a result, we have a very diverse panel of experts here, right? Jason is from our cloud practice. Joe is from Asynchrony Labs, so we'll kind of give us the software developer's perspective. And then Brian from the security side of things. So without further ado, let's just go ahead and get started. So Jason, I'm going to start with you. I think a good way to begin here would be when we're talking with customers and they're telling us the reasons that they're moving to cloud or, why are customers moving to the cloud, why are they? And then also, what are some of the roadblocks or challenges that customers are encountering when they're thinking about moving applications or workloads to the cloud?
Sure. Thanks again, everyone. I would say what we hear most often, number one, is agility is the driving factor for wanting to look at cloud as a deployment platform. And what I mean by that is the ability to design and deploy software quickly and have it be, right, whatever you've built maybe with simple components and building blocks is now massively scalable and elastic, right? And that's very attractive and can be done rather simply. And then also for experimentation, prototyping, and, greenfield R&D, it's a very low barrier to entry. I don't have to invest in any hardware, right? There's risk there because what if the project is not a success? Customers don't like whatever I built. Well, now I have all this hardware that I've invested in, not to mention the procurement headaches of trying to get the hardware and where to put it, and now I have to manage and maintain it, right? So those for those reasons, cloud is very attractive, but they also create some sort of side effects, let's say. So we've heard of the concept of shadow IT, right? So because it's so attractive and quick and easy to deploy something on a public cloud, we see developers wanting to do right for their business and get software to market quickly, and they see their own IT organization as an impediment, so they'll go around them. that obviously for us in IT and in the enterprise infrastructure folks, that creates some management headaches, right? And then not only that, but then let's say the project is successful and the customers like it and now it starts to scale, well, the sticker shock can be large, right? So as you scale up, the price tag from a public cloud provider goes up more rapidly than it would on your own equipment, right? So those are some challenges, some things that we see as the pros and cons and that we help customers work through, right?
Yeah, I think that's really telling. I think a lot of times, you know, conventional wisdom around why you're moving to the cloud is to save money, right? Move stuff out of the data center. I thought it was really telling that what you're saying we're hearing from customers, and I've heard the same thing. The primary reason for moving is the agility and what it allows your business to do, right? And cost is more of a consideration for how you architect and how you look at building your applications in the cloud. It'll change what the cost equation looks like. So I think it's also a really good intro for you, Joe, right? Because when I think of agility, there's agility of your business, but there's also agility of your software development practices and using that to enable, you know, building great applications and things in the cloud. So maybe for starters, you know, give the audience today kind of a software developer perspective of what are some of the considerations around architecting applications in the cloud?
Sure. So I think that depends on the type of application, whether it's going to be consumer facing or internal for your own enterprise. But I guess there's three that come to mind. The first one is where is the data that you're going to be accessing? Are you making a standalone system or a prototype of an application that's just going to reside in the cloud as a prototype? You're going to see, you know, will it be adopted, or are you building an enabling productivity application for your internal enterprise users? And if so, do you need a hybrid approach to access some of the data within your existing organization? Do you have APIs for that data? Do you have access to that data? Or do I need to open up ports to the cloud to make those APIs available? So there's those concerns about hybrid and where your data is and where that data is going to need to flow. I think the second one that you touched on earlier is scalability. Am I taking advantage of the scalability that the cloud provides? So am I architecting my software in a services-oriented architecture in a way that I can scale certain services if I need to? Or am I building a monolithic application that I'm just, you know, taking from my existing infrastructure and plopping it into the cloud and maybe not getting any of the benefits of that scale and that flexibility that the cloud provides? And then lastly, security is always important. So if I'm building a hybrid application, I'm opening new holes into my existing infrastructure, I have a new opening in my DMZ, what have I exposed that wasn't exposed before? How am I going to secure that data? What kind of encryption am I going to use? How am I going to do authentication within? If it's, you know, enterprise users, am I going to authenticate back to Active Directory? Am I going to have some sort of single sign-on model? Or am I going to store the user information in the cloud in a separate system? So those are three of the big concerns that come to mind right off the top.
And as far as the data location, that's huge, right? From an architecture point of view, it's no different than any multi-site solution, right? So you want your data close to the application that's consuming it for good performance and latency, right? And if it's traversing a WAN link or an internet VPN connection in a hybrid model, well, now you have to deal with that possibility of hairpinning traffic, and what does that do to latency and performance, right?
Right.
So then do I put a local replica out on my public cloud? And if so, how do I secure it?
Right.
And how do I keep it in sync with the system of record? Right.
Well, so, you know, if we mentioned security three times in the conversation, that means we need to let Brian talk, right? So I think, you know, that was a great overview of why people are moving to the cloud, you know, those application considerations. We'd be remiss, though, if we didn't talk about security in the cloud. I know when people think about moving to the cloud and what some of the barriers might be around it, security is always a concern. So, Brian, give us a little bit of your perspective on what security in the cloud means to you and some of the things you've seen.
Thanks, Chris, and thanks, folks, for joining us. You know, if I think back to the 1990s, this is when I would walk into the room as the old-school security guy and say, nope. And I would stop everything. I would slow everything down. I would make it cost a lot more.
Yep, that's right. You security guys are the reasons my projects take longer and cost more.
Yeah, so for all you security guys out there, I gave us the history of what we used to be. But today, security's got to be an enabler, and cloud is something that is being adopted. You know, organizations are being told that they have to have speed to market. They're being told that they have to have velocity of adoption, another way of saying the same thing. They're being told they have to be a disruptor. all these, there's a whole consultative suite of buzzwords around cloud. And so where does security fall? Security is one of the biggest things that is still stopping people from going to the cloud. There's a lot of FUD out there. That's an acronym we use for fear, uncertainty, and doubt. But in reality, as long as you architect your application with the cloud in mind, as long as you do, there's a new term coming out called cyber hygiene. And folks, for cloud, you got to do your homework just like you've always done. It's not slow. I'm sorry, it's not fast. It's not quick, and it's not easy. And so you hear this velocity of adoption. You can still achieve that and have security, but it's by doing your preparation. It's by getting ready. It's by creating your standards and guidelines and following those as you adopt the cloud. And we'll talk quite a bit more about this, but it is possible to be secure and to utilize the cloud, but you got to follow your cyber hygiene and do your homework.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's well put. And yeah, I think it is important as those same considerations you have around securing any sort of application, whether it was in the cloud or not, they don't go away.
Correct.
Right. So it's a really good way of putting it. So I want to shift gears here a little bit. I think we set the stage really nicely, but you know, a thing that we're fond of saying within the cloud practice at WWT is that cloud is not a location, it's a model, right? What we mean by that is it's not just the place where you move your applications and your workloads to, it's transformative for other parts of your business and the way you operate as a business, right? So, Jason, I'm going to go back to you for starters. When you're moving to a cloud environment and you're starting to spin up applications and workloads in the cloud and some of the things that we've been talking about today, how does that change how the organization thinks about and works with IT?
Yeah, so I think there's a misnomer that we see quite often, that is this idea that the cloud, a public cloud provider, is just another place for me to run VMs. And I see customers thinking of it as a massive P2V project where I can just take my on-prem VMs and copy them or clone them up into a public cloud provider and I'm done. Now I'm on the cloud. And well, okay, all of the public cloud providers do have that capability, but if you're doing that, you're not taking advantage of any of the scalability or elasticity capabilities of the platform, not to mention any of the other instrumentation monitoring or application management and deployment tools that the cloud providers bring. Right? So if I simply copy my old stuff onto a new platform, it's simply that, it's a hosting solution. I'm not taking advantage, right? So really, to capitalize on the possibilities of cloud, it requires a change in how software is architected that I'll let Joe speak to. But in order to do that, the infrastructure has to come along for the ride. So we hear this concept of DevOps, quite literally the intersection of development and operations. What we're seeing is that you hear this concept of infrastructure as code, whereas part of an application deployment package, I can define a configuration file that says what the platform or the infrastructure has to look like for my application to run. So I send that configuration file to the infrastructure stack, whether that's on-prem or in a public cloud, and then an orchestration engine executes against that and creates the environment the way the application prescribed. Well, that's a great concept, but in order to make that real, there's quite a lot of heavy lifting we have to do on the back end, right? So on your own infrastructure stack, if you're doing that in the private cloud context, that means we've got the standardized hardware, right, as few SKUs and OEMs as possible to manage, right, make it as simple as possible. And then we have to abstract anything that we possibly can away from hardware, decouple compute, storage, and networking from hardware so that they can be treated as logical objects. Why is that important? Because now I can write policy against them, I can automate them, and orchestrate them, I can treat them as a data object, right? And then, of course, we have to have that automation and orchestration capability. Something has to receive that configuration file and execute against it, right? And that's also where policy lives, right? In order to make these things repeatable and scalable, I have to do the building blocks the same way every time instead of these what we call lovingly crafted applications that are all one-offs, right? So to do that, I have to do my due diligence up front, and that's where the change management discipline is. And that's where you spend the time designing what policies look like. And that's not only policies around how the infrastructure is deployed and configured, but it's also security policy, right?
Well, that's good. So I think that's a perfect lead-in. So that's very helpful, Jason. Thank you. I think it's a good lead-in to when you're talking about architecting applications for the cloud. You already talked about some of the ways that, you know, some of the considerations you need to make when you're building those applications, Joe. But how do things change from a process and tools standpoint, basically How does the way software developers do their development change when you're moving to the cloud?
Yeah, so you spoke about DevOps, and I think DevOps and the agility that DevOps provides and the cloud provides, I think to an extent are driven by development methodologies, agile development, and the agility that we can do in development now. So what we do at Asynchrony Labs is an agile development model for software. And for me, that just means, just to define what that means to me, it's the ability to create releases of software quickly, working software, rather than defining your requirements all up front, find just a piece at a time, iterate on that, put that working software in front of a customer, let the customer play with it, get feedback, and learn from that process to iterate again and again, working software repeatedly. So I think to take advantage of the agility the cloud provides, I can scale it, I can try new environments. It's helpful to have that agile development practice in place within your organization to really take advantage of that. And then to do agile, I think anybody, any development shop can do it for a while. To be able to do it repeatedly month after month, year after year, you need some strong engineering practices in place that enable it. So you need the ability to run automated tests. You need the ability to continuously integrate your code, maybe continuously deploy your code, so that anytime a change is made, there's a test suite that runs that makes sure you haven't broken anything. You need these disciplines and practices in place that allow you to do it. So we use test-driven development so that every feature we write is already backed up by tests.
How else could you go that fast?
Right.
Right.
You can go fast for a while, but if you're 3 months down and you decide to shift direction and you're starting to do a whole new thing, how do you make sure those 3 months still work? So, yeah, there's a lot of underlying.
Joe, I'm not a developer, so contrast that to me for what, we've seen long software development life cycles that take, 18 months or more. I've heard it called, waterfall method. So what's different, right, about that? What's a day in the life of a developer like in that model versus doing agile?
Yeah, so, with your traditional waterfall methodology, you're going to have the customer is going to come to you and you're going to define requirements for maybe a month up front. And then once you have everything figured out, you start to develop it, and it goes off into a black hole for a while. The developers come out with something a year from now or 6 months from now. You put it into integration testing. You test it. You put it in front of a user, and they say, oh, that's not what I was expecting. So you have this long, long development period where you try to define everything up front, which is really when you're the least smart about what you need is when you very first start the project. So instead with Agile, what it looks like is kind of a continuous cycle of smaller slices of functionality. So asking the customer, what's the most critical thing that this application needs to do? We'll build that for you in a week. Okay, now that you are playing with that, what's the next thing? Is it A, B, C, D, or is it maybe B, C, D, and we're going to hold A back because that's not really so important? And you get to learn from that process, or maybe we're going to go in a different direction because we see that would be more useful.
But then every time you add on a B, C, or D, then you can readjust and reprioritize and decide what's next.
And you let the customer drive some of that, and you learn from the customer, and the customer learns from the product, and you iterate, and you get smarter as you go, and you are able to capitalize on that intelligence you've got and that learning you've built.
Yeah, I think that's really great. And just to reiterate one of the points that Joe made, with cloud, you have this environment where IT is now really able to keep up with the speed of the business, right? Because how quickly and the agile way that you can spin up new infrastructure, new services, all the kind of things we're talking about. It's a shame if your organization is not built in such a way to really take advantage of that new, your development practices don't sync up with that new agility that you have with IT. So they're both equally important. So keeping on this train of thought around, people, process, the kind of processes that change in your business. From a cloud standpoint with security, Brian, talk a little bit about when you're thinking about defining your security posture or the different processes around keeping your cloud environment secure. What does that look like?
So back to the 90s, I'm sweating bullets over here. These guys are saying speed. So how does IT security, as I said, we've got to change in IT security. How do we adopt this speed? And it is through that cyber hygiene. Your posture for cloud security does not change, yet it does. So why did I say that way? I set up that conundrum deliberately. You've got to do your cyber hygiene. You've got to have your policies, your procedures, your standards, your guidelines, your governance. A recent survey of over 250,000 people who were members of a cloud community said setting your policies and requirements is important. So So he's talking about Agile. He talked about a month of set policies. Yay, security's happy. That sounds great. So how do we avoid that? The way we avoid that is you do that in the beginning, and your posture has to change. You have to set up your requirements, your standards, your guidelines, your governance ahead of time so that it's ready, so that these guys, when they want to spin up quickly, they've already been trained, they've already been taught, and they're ready to spin up at the speed they need to, and they know what to do. So security can't be a bolt-on. So the posture changes, and yet it doesn't change. First, you got to do all the things that you've always done. 51% of all attacks are still caught by cyber hygiene, by old school stuff. And the new attacks are, of course, different. We'll talk about those a little bit more. But that's how the posture has to change. That's how the spirit of IT security has to change.
I think it's a collaborative approach and an agile approach. So we would have a DevOps person on the team. We would have a security person at least consulting with the team as we go. So you don't have to have everything defined up front. Maybe you put some test data out there and you have a prototype out there and you evolve that posture as you go in consultation with security and DevOps.
I love what you said there. Security can start very easily in the cloud with sanitized data. That's the key, and a development environment. And then we can be agile and we can develop those requirements while we watch a live stand-up because it's public, it's safe data. There's no danger if it does get compromised. And that's how we can iterate. That's how we can be agile. That's how we can move at a speed. But while we're at that speed, we have to be establishing that hygiene that will apply to everything else. A modular approach. Today, I think you'll hear throughout the team that things have to be modular. They have to be able to move. They have to be able to change and be versatile.
So you, of course, need to be able to detect and mitigate a bad actor in your environment, right? But there's also trying to make your attack surface as small as possible, right? And so there's ways that we do that on the infrastructure side, right, and security hardening guides and whatnot. But from an application code development point of view, right, there's a discipline around what is secure code, right? So
there is, and that's essential. You know, 98%, according to one statistic, and folks, statistics can say anything, but according to a recent statistic, 98% of web apps are vulnerable. So you absolutely, I love to hear you say security is going to be at the table. That's what we do here. You've got to write that code securely from the beginning. You've got to look at your fields have to be validated. Your logging has to not be verbose and not give up information about the application. Again, cyber hygiene, you've got to do your homework. And we'll get to those fancy new things that you got to do in the cloud in a minute. And compliance is an issue. Jason, you talked about in a conversation we had earlier about HIPAA, PCI, and there's a big misnomer in cloud. A cloud vendor will represent that they're HIPAA compliant or that they're PCI compliant. What they're saying is that if you use their service in the correct way, it will meet HIPAA. If you use their service in the correct way, it'll meet PCI. Hardware products out there say this as well. But again, it's all about architecting it correctly. First your program, then your architecture, then your technology. You still have to dot the I's and cross the T's for HIPAA, PCI. The cloud provider doesn't magically layer that on.
Right. If the provider is HIPAA compliant or PCI compliant, whatever it is, and I put my application there, then you might think, oh, well, now I'm automatically compliant, right? And that's simply not true. It's still the customer's responsibility to achieve compliance. If they have a certification, if the platform or the provider has a certification, all they're saying is we give you the tools and resources necessary to achieve compliance if you architect appropriately.
Yes.
No, that's well put. And I want to make sure we have time to give some customer examples too, right? But, you know, to kind of summarize that, you know, we're worldwide technology. We love talking about technology. But I think what you saw from what these three guys said right here is when you're moving to the cloud, it's not just about technology. It's about the process. It's about your people. About the way that IT and your business operates, right? And having those two things working together is where you really get the full business value out of migrating applications and workloads to the cloud. So I thought that was really, that was a really great, some really great points there. So to wrap up today, we don't have you guys on stage just because you know how to talk about this stuff. You've actually done it too, right? Which is great. So what I wanted to do is kind of walk through some customer examples of how we've seen this actually working in practice, customers building or moving applications to the cloud. So, Jason, I want to start with you. Maybe give an example of a customer that you've worked with that's kind of starting to think about embarking on this cloud journey, right, moving applications and workloads and things like that to the cloud, and talk a little bit about the way they thought about it, some of the roadblocks they're in.
I have a really interesting one. So it's a manufacturing company, and their product is electronic test equipment, things like oscilloscopes. And they've become aware, or their customers have made them aware, that all these devices that they make generate data. And their customers are interested in being able to capture and analyze that data and aggregate that data, right? So this manufacturing company suddenly finds themselves in the software business. So now they want to create a software as a service application in the cloud so that their customers can log in and access the data that their instruments are producing and do analytics against them, right? So they didn't have an Agile development shop at all. So we had to help them build one. So there was some Agile coaching necessary there, as well as getting the correct tooling to be able to deploy code, do continuous integration, continuous delivery, that sort of thing, as well as the platform layer. So they had that challenge for their custom code, and then where to put it. So which cloud and why, right? And it turns out because they wanted to develop this analytics capability quickly, some of the large cloud providers already have analytics engines that you can just consume from their service catalog as a platform service, right? So they built the front end and sort of the customer-facing portal to get to their data and design the repository for the data. But then the analytics engine, all they had to do was connect it, and it was already built. So that was cool, right? And they were able to get value very quickly from that. So there was still, they also had a portfolio of legacy applications or their existing applications in their data center. And they were interested in getting out of the data center business. We hear that frequently, right? And the reality of that is it's an application by application approach. Certainly there will be some apps that make sense to either migrate to the cloud, re-architect to be in the cloud, or simply P2B in some cases. Or there's also situations where the functionality could be replaced with some other solution, like a software as a service, maybe say Exchange for email, you could replace with Office 365 as an example, right? In fact, that's what this customer did, right? So it ended up being a few different solutions, again, based one application at a time to meet their needs. And then they also had to look at how the architecture was going to change the performance of applications. So let's say they had a traditional three-tier app running on-prem, so all the traffic that it produces is all east-west within their data center. And they considered, well, what if we move the presentation layer out to a public cloud so that it's more easily scalable, but we'll keep the data on-prem. So now they have this problem of the traffic has shifted, right? We talked about what that means before with hairpinning and whatnot. So now we had to model the traffic. Where is that going to put stress on either a WAN uplink or on a dedicated circuit into the public cloud provider or on a VPN connection over their internet edge, right? Do they have capacity for that kind of bandwidth? Do they need to invest more there, and does it make sense to do so? So we had to help them figure that out and do the due diligence around it. And then, of course, if you've got multiple cloud solutions, whether it's software as a service or a public provider, and as well as your on-prem, well, now it's more complex to instrument and manage, and that includes also from a security context, right? So the public cloud providers have great tools to be able to do that, and I can use their logging and monitoring and security analytics tools, but however they do it is probably different than how I do it on-prem. So do I now have two that I need to monitor and maintain? Or do I try and aggregate them into one and deploy my own tools on the public provider? And there's a trade-off. It's part of that is just customer preference and what makes the most sense for your organization, right? But it's something that you have to think through.
That's good. And that's a really good holistic example, I would say, right? As Jason walked through that, it touched on the infrastructure. It touched on software development, end user experience, security, right? So it kind of gives an idea.
That's why I picked it.
Thank you. Yeah, that makes sense. That's good. It kind of gives an idea. We did prepare for this. It gives an idea of the complexity. So Joe and Brian, I kind of want to use you guys to drill into a couple of those areas that Jason talked about for some examples from your own personal experience. So, Joe, I'm going to start with you. Talk about maybe a specific application that you've worked with a team on developing for the cloud, what some of the specific considerations were and how that worked.
Sure. So Asynchrony's built a lot of applications for the cloud. The one that comes to mind as an obvious example is the one that I'm a product manager of, Cryptox. So Cryptox is an ultra-secure file-sharing application, and a customer came to us, a large financial services firm, and said, we want to utilize the cloud. We want to put documents that are very, very sensitive onto mobile devices, on the mobile edge, but we want it to be extraordinarily secure with no chance of data exfiltration and all these requirements around security. So we architected a system that takes advantage of a lot of the features of cloud, a lot of the things we've talked about, but is built to be extraordinarily secure. So think Dropbox with four layers of encryption. So one of the big things we use is a hybrid deployment model. So we were able to, because the architecture is a services-oriented architecture, we're able to take different components, some that are more risky, put them internally, some that are less risky, put them in the private cloud. So for example, it's file storage and sharing and synchronization. So you've got, let's just simplify, you've got three components, encrypted file storage, keys, because every file has its own encryption key, so keys that unlock those files, and then the encryption platform and the encryption services that do that encryption and secure that. We can take those three components and say, okay, encrypted files are stored in the cloud. So they're highly available. They're available worldwide. They're very quick to download. But the keys are going to be stored in a hardware security module in this other cloud component. And then the encryption algorithm and master keys are going to be stored only on premises. So we can separate that those security concerns and that risk into different components with a hybrid architecture. So that's one way that the cloud helps us serve files quickly, but still has security built around it. And then there's considerations security-wise to think of there, that if that public cloud is maybe a little bit less trusted than your private infrastructure, are you going to design it so that even an admin in that cloud couldn't get your data? So, there's no keys there where those files are stored. So even if someone did break in, they can't access your data.
Yeah.
And then there's other things to consider.
Or even if they access the data, it would be meaningless.
Right.
Yeah.
There's other things like testing that we can take advantage of with the cloud. So because it's a services-oriented architecture, we can scale out to serve, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 clients. But how do we test that? How do we, quickly scale up a test rig that can simulate that load? We can use the cloud to do that and cheaply do it, scale it up for a day, run all of our tests, scale it back down again, and not have a problem.
Yeah. What I love about that example is I think a lot of times when people think of cloud, they think cloud less secure. The example you gave there is a way you kind of use the unique features of the cloud to make an application more secure, actually, right? Which is kind of cool. So, speaking of security, again, we mentioned security a bunch of times, which means, Brian, it must be time for us to get back to you, right, to wrap things up here. So, in the same vein as these guys, why don't you give an example of when you worked with a customer to advise them around security in the cloud and how that went?
So, security is always a bolt-on. They took all my time, so I got to get it on at the very end very quickly. I want to leave you guys with some tangible takeaways. We had a customer come to us, and they wanted to adopt cloud. They said, we're standing up new. We want to go cloud. How do we do it? We told them, you got to set your governance risk and your compliance. You got to do your asset inventory. And they were like, whoa, we're not going to do all that. Well, now that customer's come back to us, and they've said, hey, we've got these things over here, and they're authenticated and logged one way, and over here authenticated and logged another way. How do we bring all that back together? So here's the tangible takeaways I want to leave with you. We said cloud is the same, but it's different. Set up your governance, your risk, and compliance, point one. Point two, inventory your assets. Know where your things are in the cloud. Point three, what data is on those assets? And is it high, medium, or low security? We all have a limited time, resource, and budget. So we focus the time, resource, and budget to the high security items. And then from there, you go on into your housekeeping, your patch management. You go into your compliance, your risk management, et cetera, and your auditing and logging. So the last two things I'll leave you that are different for cloud, we don't have time for all of them, but encryption, he mentioned, encrypt your data. You can put your data wherever you want, encrypt your data, control your keys, and we'd love to help you with an architecture around that. And then the other one is logging and monitoring, and Jason touched on it. And this is the evolution of security. I've got two colleagues here that don't do security as their primary role, but you heard them talking about security. Thankfully, we're reaching that evolution in the industry where everybody's talking about security. And to that end, you've got to control your keys. You've got to encrypt your data. It's got to be able to move anywhere.
Right.
And we'll talk about some other items.
But at the same time, we need to escape from the 1990s, and we don't want to stifle innovation, right? We have to do agile development and go fast. So how do we do that and do it securely? And that's where the discipline comes in to design good policies, right?
Yeah, don't take all the security guy's time and bolt him on at the end.
Right. So every time I deploy something, I've already done the due diligence that I
Absolutely.
Know it meets all my security requirements.
It's modular. You've adopted a framework. All the guys know how to play in the framework. They can move quickly and agilely and still follow the requirements that you've set up for them ahead of time.
I still think there's also a component of collaborating as you go to develop that model. If you don't have that model in place, you can start, put a development environment in the cloud, put sanitize test data in the cloud, work with your security people to and your DevOps people to come up with those processes that need to be there in time before real data is out there.
But without stopping everything,
yeah.
Yes. As
yeah,
long
iterate
as
you're
using
it.
That sanitized public data, absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, that's a good place to end it on. So I think we probably have time for a question or two maybe from the audience.
Our first question is, we hear a lot about public, private, hybrid. Can you expand a little when public is appropriate versus private or hybrid?
Yeah, I think I'll take that. We see this, Gartner has spoken about this quite a bit recently, and we've seen it in our own customers, that hybrid seems to be the way forward, that while public cloud makes sense for some workloads, and there are certainly advantages to using public cloud for some workloads, it's not going to be for everything. You're going to have some stuff on-prem, so then the question becomes, how do I connect the two together and manage what goes where, right? And we talked about some of the architecture decisions that have to be made to do that. But to me, really, it's a multi-cloud world, and the challenge really is around how do I instrument and monitor that? How do I manage if I've got more than one platform? If the tools are different from one to the next, or do I try to make them the same, right?
Yeah, and there are both software development tools and DevOps tools that can help you do that, that are already set up to work with, you know, three or four different cloud providers and help you do, you know, deployment, help you do testing and integration.
Such as?
Some that come to mind are for deployment are like Chef, one of those that we use, Terraform that's set up to, you know, you can define it in one layer here, and it abstracts out which cloud you're going to submit to.
So, well, the public cloud providers have tools like that, too. Why not just use that?
It gives you an advantage to be able to, if you're going to do a hybrid deploy especially, use the same tooling for your internal infrastructure as you're using for your external or your public.
That's the key, right? If you use the platform capabilities from the provider, you're now stuck with that provider. And maybe you're okay with that.
And it's not necessarily a bad place to start. If you want to get your feet wet, you can start there and say, okay, now that we need to deploy this, you know, we know we're going to deploy it in 3 months. Let's start thinking about how we optimize that deployment process. And, oh, now that we think it needs to be hybrid, where we maybe didn't know that up front, now we can say, all right, we need to abstract that layer. You can still do it iteratively. But
yeah, it's not necessarily bad, but it's a trade-off, right? So, like,
yeah.
My example with this of the electronic instruments, right, their big data analytics capability was they consumed it from the platform. So, yeah, they're now stuck with that platform unless they re-architect, right? But they're okay with that, and it meets their needs. So it's a good solution. So,
and it's a little bit more cut and dried on the security side. For public, you would want your lowest security data to be in a pure public cloud, unless it's something like Salesforce or something like Office 365 or all these ERP, ADP type solutions, payroll, those type of things are different. So that's public. And then private is when you have incredibly high security data. Private seems to be a clear choice from the security perspective. Obviously, you got to collaborate. And then hybrid is what we tend to find ourselves, the area we tend to find ourselves in so often. Case study, recent customer that we assessed, they keep their Active Directory in their cloud. In their on-prem, so they control their own provisioning and deprovisioning. They keep their keys on-prem so that they control the encryption keys and such. So that's public-private hybrid from a security perspective at 30,000 foot.
Brian, would you say for the decision, the security-based decision to keep data on-prem, that's not really a pure technology decision. That's much more around either regulatory or just, you know, maybe it's the proprietary, you know, secret sauce, trade secret of the company, right? And they're just not comfortable. Even though we can technically prove it's secure, maybe they're just not comfortable with it being on public cloud.
Yeah, being collaborative and showing that evolution of security like we talked about, first I would have said, cloud has to stay at home. I mean, data has to stay at home.
Yeah.
But now today, that's where the encryption comes in. Encrypt the data,
right.
Put it in the cloud so you get the best performance, so your apps and your dev and your ops run the best, and yet I'm still secure.
Right.
So that's the flexibility we have to show.
We still have to contend with things like data sovereignty rules, right, where there's certain countries where
data
can't leave their border.
Of course.
So, or we've seen state governments where they say we don't want our data to leave the state because we don't want jobs to leave the state.
And encryption,
right?
Encryption export regulations as well.
Good.
Yeah.
So that's good. And I think we flashed the stats, I think, a little bit earlier in the webinar. And hybrid cloud for the vast majority of customers is where we see customers going, right? So this combination of, on-prem, private cloud, and public cloud infrastructure. And there's a lot of, you know, all of these considerations that we talked about today around your architecture, software, dev, security. There's kind of some, these guys started to touch on it, there's kind of unique considerations around a hybrid environment. What's it like when you have data moving from on-prem to public, making sure that that movement of data is secure, all those sorts of things. So it really is what we're seeing with customers, this hybrid sort of approach. So looking at the time here, I think we probably have time for one more question maybe before we wrap it up. So Brian, if you got one more for us.
Okay, Chris, we have this question. With the customers you've been working with, do you see some taking a multi-vendor approach to the cloud? And if so, why and what are the advantages?
Yes, yeah, so this fits very well in with this hybrid sort of discussion, right? So whichever you guys wants to start, when we're working with our customers, are they usually all sticking with one vendor? Are there multiple vendors involved with the strategy? What are your thoughts on that?
Security has 500 vendors that we're tracking, okay? And we cut it off at 500 because going beyond that's just crazy. So in a security world, you're definitely going to have a multi-vendor scenario for almost anything that you do. So that's why we say programs first, architecture second, and then technologies. And try to get technologies that, if you've done what I've described with cyber hygiene, match them up together, make sure they play nicely.
Yeah. Remember, when you consider what is a public cloud provider, it includes software as a service providers. So if you have something like Office 365 or Salesforce.com or one of those, right, that's yet another public cloud that you're consuming. I think maybe what the question is getting at, though, is if you're talking about a large commercial commodity cloud where I can deploy workloads or take advantage of their platform and build applications, would I use more than one? I would say if it makes sense for the application, it might be good for your organization, but of course, you know, KISS, we want to have as few things to manage as possible.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It is a multi-cloud world, so is it okay to have more than one? Yes, if there's a specific reason an application requires it. Right?
This plays into something we run into in cloud. We've coined a phrase, I think I'm the first one to coin this phrase, I'll probably find out I'm not, circle of trust. The more that you contain your circle of trust, you're dealing with your admins, your vendors, your third parties, your policies, and your concerns. The more you expand it, now you're dealing with their admins, their policies, their procedures, their security concerns. So the more clouds you adopt, the more vendors you adopt, you continually expand that circle of trust. So you should definitely, KISS is a good principle. We used it in the military. Keep it as simple and safe. I'll change it as you possibly can. And think about it. Do your homework. Don't expand that circle of trust any further than you have to.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So I'm sure we have our legal team on it right now.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you didn't come up with circle of trust, but maybe it's
Well, circle of trust for cloud.
Services for cloud. All right, I'll give you that one. So,
thanks.
Cool. So I think for any of the other questions that we have submitted through the WebEx or anything like that, we're going to make sure to get to those after the webinar. So we'll kind of go through and follow up with people individually to answer those sorts of questions. I think also after the webinar, you'll see a follow-up communication coming out probably later today or tomorrow around that for how to get in touch with us, ask further questions. We love having conversations with customers around this, and we'd be happy to set up follow-on calls or meetings or come visit us out here in St. Louis. So thanks, everybody, for joining. Appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you.